The city shuts down some local vaccination sites for seniors, but the state moves in with a new spot. A First Coast man is charged in the riots at the U.S. Capitol, and the 2023 mayor's race is officially underway. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, all of the top stories of the week with our Friday roundtable. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, we've got some advice on how to get access to the new round of PPP funding that's out there on the street now for small business. You'll want to stick around and hear that. But first, it's Friday, and here to discuss yet another busy week in the news, we welcome writer-journalist Nikisha Williams. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Good morning, Jacksonville.
Good morning. Tim Gibbons, editor of the Jacksonville Business Journal, is here. Hi, Tim.
Good to be here.
John Delaney, former Jacksonville mayor and president emeritus of the University of North Florida. Hi, John.
Hi, Melissa.
Good to have you. And rounding out our amazing panel, WJCT regular contributor Charles Griggs. Hi, Charles.
Good morning, Melissa. Good morning, Jacksonville.
Good morning, everyone. Great to have you. Lots to talk about this week, and we will go to your calls in a moment. It's 549-2937 to join the show. Already getting your calls. Meanwhile, here are the latest pandemic numbers. 12,873 new cases of coronavirus reported across Florida yesterday, including nearly 1,000 in our area. That's a slightly lower tally compared to 2 weeks ago. Some good news. The state's cumulative case total now stands at above 1.6 million, with nearly 25,000 deaths. So in light of these numbers, we want to bring you up to date as we begin the show with the latest on the city of Jacksonville's efforts to get more vaccine supply out to senior citizens. Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry says that due to a lack of supply coming in at the federal level, distribution of the first dose of the COVID-19 vaccine at the Lane, Wiley, and Mandarin senior centers here in Jacksonville will end tonight at 6 o'clock. Anyone who has received their first dose of the Pfizer vaccine at those two centers will return to the same location 21 days later to get their second dose. But all the action is now moving. It's shifting to a state-run vaccination site that's set up this week at the Regency Mall. So if you're in this area and you're 65 or older and you can show that you're a part or full-time Florida resident, you need to call the number that is posted by the city to make an appointment at the Regency Mall. We'll give that number in a moment, but we want to begin with your calls on this. It's 549-2937 as we talk about the scramble to vaccinate here in Florida. 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Our Facebook page is open. John Delaney, let me begin with you. As a former mayor, I think Mayor Curry has received a lot of praise for his efforts to extend the mask mandate for Duval County and to do his best to set up vaccination centers around town. He and other mayors are all telling the same story across Florida. There isn't enough supply. And so it's been a chaotic rollout, a frustrating rollout, and it's been tough for state and local officials to execute on this, even though they're trying very hard. What are your thoughts about the challenge for officials to meet this massive public health imperative? And how do you see the new Biden administration potentially ramping up supply as they've promised to do?
Yeah, sort of 3 points. One, there's some news reports that as many as 20 million doses haven't been distributed, which is frightening to think of. The second is expectations. You know, we've got about 330 million people in this country, and the manufacturers are obviously cranking this out as quickly as they can, but you're not going to have 330 million doses in just a matter of days, much less the ability to be able to vaccinate. And so expectations was a lot of this. It's not as if the country hadn't had plenty of time to plan for this. You know, we knew a vaccine was coming at some point in time, and it came, I think, quicker than a lot of experts had predicted. So the logistics are really the key. I think Jacksonville's done a good job with that, as you pointed out. The problem is simply supply. And perhaps we needed to have some way to, you know, like water management district. You know, even side of the streets go this day, odd side the other. You know, maybe there's a way to deal with ages or the alphabet to kind of help expectations when you know you could schedule an appointment. Finally, my big worry is simply poor people that don't have transportation, that don't have a computer, that don't have a smartphone, that maybe are limited to just trying to phone call. And somehow there's got to be some way to deal with that. And hopefully our city has got some plans to deal with that in the immediate future.
Yeah. You know, Nikisha, the appointments that have been made available at Publix pharmacies have filled up amazingly quickly. And it's been pointed out that Publix stores aren't often in poorer communities, which does close those residents out. Although, let's be honest, very few people have been able to get those appointments. What about, Nikisha, what about what we're hearing from the new Biden White House? Last night, the new White House chief of staff in Washington, Ron Klain, said that new President Biden's going to invoke the Defense Production Act so that vaccine supply can be increased. He said that should increase the supply by at least 20%. When you look at this, though, the challenges for the new administration they're pretty daunting to work with these two major companies, Pfizer and Moderna, to get more supply out as fast as they can.
The problem that we face with the supply and the rollout of the vaccine is the same problem that we faced a year ago with the rollout of mass testing nationwide and the production of PPE. We are always behind the curve as a country, as a state, as a city, as a county. It just trickles down. It trickles down from the top. And so I applaud the new administration for invoking the Defense Production Act sooner rather than later to help increase the supply of the COVID-19 vaccine. But honestly, this should have been a conversation months ago under the previous administration when we found out that there was a vaccine that was going to be imminent and we should have had enough orders and ready to go from that previous administration to inoculate the entire country way before January. To do it while we're in the process, to ask for those orders and to try to increase production while we're in the process of trying to do the most mass vaccination campaign in the United States history is preposterous. And so we're under an immense amount of pressure, and we have always been behind the curve and behind where we needed to be in terms of trying to fight the virus, protect people against the virus, and now get them vaccinated against the virus.
And Charles Griggs, let's talk about the particular challenges in Florida, where Governor DeSantis is prioritizing people 65 and older. Of course, we have more seniors than just about any other state. They've experienced a lot of frustration trying to get an appointment. We've even seen a lot of vaccine tourism, where seniors are coming here from other states to try to get a COVID shot. And that has led state officials to start demanding a residency requirement. At the new site that's set up at the Regency Mall, you have to be able to show you're either a part or a full-time Florida resident. And so here in Florida, there are some wrinkles to this.
The challenge has been, and we've heard this, previously from our, from Mr. Delaney and Ms. Williams. The challenge has been really how local communities have been able to deal with this. I don't want it to be lost on our listeners how much people on the ground contribute and are prepared for scenarios like this. You know, this typically would be an emergency management led by emergency incident command structure led by public health. And that would be coming from the top. That would be coming from the top of the federal government. And those scenarios they would reach down all the way to the state. Those algorithms or the plans would be practiced and over and over prior to the finalization of a vaccine or approval of a vaccine. And we would have plans in place ready to go for each community to take and to implement on a moment's notice. That didn't occur during this pandemic. And I know that on a local level, we continue to struggle to fit opportunities into where we see it's kind of like a whack-a-mole vaccine distribution scenario, where we've seen initially we saw that with the testing, and now we've seen it with the vaccine. And you have to give our local administration credit that it has responded under a great deal of pressure and challenges that's been coming from the top with the lack of planning and the lack of coordination going forward. So hopefully under the new administration, we'll see better planning from the top and those communities on the ground. I mean, just look at the various vaccine distribution plans for each of the surrounding counties here in the First Coast. It is, they're all very inconsistent with each other. And that speaks to a lack of planning from a regional standpoint. And it also says that each community is really trying their best. They're doing their best to fend for themselves without a lot of leadership from the top.
Mm. Tim Gibbons, we saw an ideological clash over this week. The new Biden administration says not only is it going to invoke the Defense Production Act, it's going to involve agencies like FEMA, wrapping up the National Guard. Governor Ron DeSantis fired back saying, we don't need any FEMA camps in Florida. We just need more vaccine. So there is a differing approach as to how to address this, whether there is a coordinated federal approach or the more patchwork approach that we've been seeing to date, as Charles said, with local communities and states basically during the Trump presidency just going their own way and trying to figure this out as best they can. What about this ideological divide?
It's interesting in talking to people both in city government and, we do a lot of coverage of the logistics industry, and in both cases, you have similar frustrations. You look back at how the city handed out money to small businesses last year, where it was a lot of people that they had to get money to, and it could have been very chaotic. It actually went pretty smoothly, according to most businesses. You know, we have a great logistics setup in the U.S., and we're not tapping into this in any real way because of this patchwork sort of thing. I think it was Omar Bradley who said that amateurs talk strategy and professionals talk logistics. You had great scientists who made the vaccines, but the actual process of getting it there can't be done as a patchwork thing. I mean, think about, we talk about distributing things through Publix. One of the reasons why the state would turn to a private company like that is, think of how much perishable goods Publix moves around every day. We have these networks. We have a system where goods can be moved around, but it doesn't work. Publix doesn't have, it doesn't let each district manager decide how stuff's going to be shipped. The idea of having each city, each state have to kind of, figure it out on their own and reinvent the wheel does not appear to be working.
Mm. Let's go to your calls now. It's our Friday roundtable. We're talking about the latest efforts to get seniors vaccinated here in our area. What are your questions? Have you already received a shot? Have you had trouble getting an appointment? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Jeff is in Kensington. Kensington. Where's that, Jeff?
It's over McKernan in Atlantic.
Oh, right. Yes, I know where that is.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. So last night at 9:30, I got a call from a friend who was at the Sears at the Regency Mall Center for the old Sears building for getting recycled. And the guy had come out and said that there were 170 unused vaccines that they were throwing open to anybody who could show up.
Really?
This was 9:30 at night, and they were trying to get them out, and they would give them to anybody who showed up. So my wife, who's a middle school teacher, and I decided we were going to go. So we went, and sure enough, got vaccinated. But that tells me that if at 9:30 at night they've still got that many left over, there's a scheduling issue or a scheduling problem reaching out to the people that aren't. By the way, I am not over 65. I am not. My initial reaction was to just say, no, wait, let it to people who need it. But at 9:30, they're not going to be able to reach out to enough people to get it. They needed to get those things before they go to waste. So I went ahead and did it.
Yeah, they'd rather use the supply than throw it out. That's so interesting, Jeff. Thank you for that call. That's Jeff in Kensington. John Delaney, what about that? Do you think they'll be able to iron those issues out? Because they are trying very hard to get the word out. Let me give the number again, by the way. If you're over 65 and you need a vaccination, call this number, 866-200-3762. Make an appointment at the new state-run Regency Mall site. That was interesting feedback, John Delaney.
Yeah, I'm hearing the exact same thing. I think the caller had it right. It's a scheduling issue. They probably need to overschedule to try to make up for the end of the day kind of a windfall. I've had some friends that have taken elderly parents, and at the end of the shift, they go, hey, we've got an extra one here that's going to go bad. Let me go ahead and give it to you. I equally have a trouble, though. I'm also hearing sort of rumor, well, not more than rumors, facts, that people that are not under 65 or move into the head of the line, And much like the PPP loans that we'll discuss later, I think in the next 6 months to a year, there's going to be a lot looking back at who shouldn't have got those loans and who shouldn't have got the shots at that time. But it's a logistics thing. You know, the President Biden has issued an order to try to get to 1 million doses per day. Right now, I think we're at about 800,000 or 900,000. So the Washington Post has several editorials today saying that it really needs to be the 2 to 3 million. Trying to get 300 plus million doses manufactured by the end of last year is just simply impossible, much less you can't vaccinate that many people in a short window. So getting it done in a matter of a few months, the beginning of 2021, is probably the best we can hope for. And hopefully things continue to smooth out and they continue to work on the scheduling issues.
Yeah. Yeah. Nikisha, that is really fascinating. And also, not only are some people under 65 apparently getting shots, the whole vaccine tourism issue is interesting to monitor, too. The state telling people who roll up to these sites, look, you've got to be a Florida resident, because there's just been growing frustration about snowbirds, I guess, having access to the vaccines.
And I just think that goes to the nature of what I said earlier about us just being behind the curve in the pandemic with no real playbook for states or cities to go by. Everybody is making up the rules as they can, and people are saying, well, this place has testing or this place has vaccines, let me just go there and get it, because they're trying to protect themselves. And so it's created a national panic. So with the vaccine tourism, it's not surprising to me. It's not surprising that snowbirds who come and say, well, I am a partial resident of Florida, I'll just leave New York, go get my vaccine real quick, and then go back home. That doesn't surprise me. And so, yes, I applaud the state for saying that, you know, you should at least be show proof of residency. That's great. But again, we need a plan. I mean, if we looked at this like there was a hurricane, there was no way that we would have this free-for-all of what to do next and who's going to get what and who's talking to which agency, federal, state, or national. And so, I mean, we need to think of COVID the same way, that this is a massive hurricane that has been over our city, our country, for a year, and yet we still don't have a handle on how to respond to it. And that is a mess.
Yeah. 549-2937. Woody is in Arlington. Hi, Woody. Go ahead. Go ahead and turn your radio down, Woody. Go ahead.
Okay, hold on.
Okay.
Yeah, 549-293.
Yeah, go ahead and turn that down and go ahead with your thoughts.
Okay, I got it. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Woody.
Okay, I live in Arlington, and what y'all just talking about, the vaccinations at Regency Mall, that's the first I've heard of it.
Uh-huh.
And I live less than a mile from the mall.
Wow. Well, that's why we're here, Woody, to try to get the word out, along with all the other local media who are trying to amplify the city of Jacksonville's messaging. And so are you over 65?
Oh, yes.
Okay, Woody.
It's going to be a long time before I ever see 65 again.
All right, Woody, do you have pen and paper? I want to write you to write down this phone number if you want to make an appointment at Regency Mall to get the vaccine.
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
All right. Call this number, 1-866-200-3762. All right?
Hold up. I got too many numbers here, I think.
1-866-200-3762. Got it?
Okay, 866-200-3762.
That's it, sir. Make that call. Get that shot, okay?
I'm going to, because I intend to be around and aggravate everybody for a long time.
I'm so glad to hear that. That's Woody in Arlington, Charles Griggs. How about the fact that even though the city is doing everything they can, and we need to give them lots of credit, doing everything they can to get the word out about these changes, which are happening so rapidly, a lot of people just don't know that these shots are available. So we're just going to keep trying to amplify the message. There's a new state-run COVID vaccination site at the Regency Mall. If you're 65 and older, call 1-866-200-3762. Make an appointment. Charles, we've got to keep trying to get the word out.
Yeah, we do, and it is really upon the entire community to help out with how we respond to this pandemic. As we see more opportunities for vaccination distribution come online, such as more pharmacies, you'll see MOUs come out with pharmacies to get the vaccine out. That's what we did with H1N1. You'll see other partners in the community have opportunities to vaccinate. That's what you saw Senator Gibson do with the church a few weeks ago in the black community. And you'll see things will expand and it'll become more commonplace. And we'll start to settle into how people receive vaccines throughout the community. But again, all of this should have been and could have been planned from the top a long time ago. Those people who work in emergency management or in emergency response will tell you that they practice these scenarios for all types of emergency disaster responses. Like Nikisha was mentioning, they know exactly how to respond, but the order has to come down from the top. And if no one says we need for you to activate this plan or we need for you to practice this scenario, we knew back in March that at some point we'd have a vaccine. Plans were probably being coordinated at that point, but they were never pushed down. They were never executed. They were never practiced or rehearsed. And here we are now, having to put together all these happenstance opportunities for vaccinations to make sure we have protect our community and keep people covered.
Let's take one more call on this, and then we'll move on to some other news from the week. Elda is in Atlantic Beach. Hi, Elda. Good morning.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that I was able to use the phone number you gave to what they're doing is they have you put in your pertinent, just your date of birth, and I was able to make an appointment for my 78-year-old mother, and they're going to call me so that we can go to Regency and get that done as soon as possible.
Oh, that's great, Elda. I'm so glad to hear that. Thanks for your call. All right. Good luck, everyone out there. We'll keep getting this information out on WJCT News over the radio and on our website as well. It's 549-2937 to join the show, but we're going to move on now to some other important headlines from the week. Beginning with more downtown news, the Jacksonville Business Journal broke a big story this week. They found out the National Park Service will not accept trading part of the old shipyard's property for Metropolitan Park. That according to an email from the Park Service seen by several sources. Now, while that doesn't mean this whole project is dead, the JBJ reports it looks as though plans for Jaguars owner Shad Khan's proposed development on the waterfront have some more hoops to jump through. Tim Gibbons, your outlet broke this story. Tell us more.
So it's going to be interesting. And this has been a long-running thing. Your listeners are probably used to hearing about the shipyards project. The reality is that most of what we think about under the term of the shipyards, what the team in the city has used as the shipyards project, is actually right across the street from TIA Bank Field on Met Park, extending into the shipyards property, which is adjacent to it. So the park itself is supposed to be a park in perpetuity, meaning you can never develop it. So for it to be developed, the city has to find some other park space to swap for it and has to have the National Park Service sign off on that. The news this week is that they don't want to swap it for part of the shipyards, which kind of has the city have to go back and find another spot. We talked to Barbara Goodman, who's been in the parks business for decades. This isn't a terribly common sort of thing, trying to swap a park. It happens. But the question is there somewhere else that would be acceptable? And if not, that just means that Met Park can't be developed. It doesn't mean the shipyards is dead, but it means that Met Park will remain a park.
Mm. John Delaney, for people who've been following this whole saga for years, it's just one more hurdle in the big challenge of developing along the water, developing the urban core. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I actually was the first one to make a stab at trying to swap that property when we were planning on redoing an amphitheater on the site. And the grant that came from the National Park Service has a limitation on the number of paid events that can go on. I guess limited to 4 per year. And the idea being that, you know, you want to try to make parks free if possible. And I had always assumed the Curry administration was going to look for the landing site. It's got to be a comparable site, same acreage, same kind of access. And, you know, there's just a limited amount of downtown waterfront. But apparently that was not in the cards. They're resistant to it, the Park Service. Then Congresswoman Corrine Brown was trying to help with it. And I finally just pulled the plug on it. At the time, there was massive opposition from the St. Nicholas neighborhood that disappeared when the Jaguars in the city put up Daly's Place. The Shipyard property is still pretty big. It extends west of Metro Park, which was a Mayor Godbold construction project, and it goes all the way down to the Berkman Plaza. So there's a lot of land there and a lot of berth. My gut is keeping it a park will just be a great amenity for whatever else goes on the rest of the shipyards, and ultimately when Lot J returns, which I think is at some point inevitable.
You do.
I do. But I think it being a park is just great, and I think they'll be able to work around it. You know, people like to look at green space when they're in a condo or in an office building.
Speaking of that, Nikesha Williams, what about the campaign called Riverfront Parks Now? That's a group made up of Scenic Jacksonville, the St. John's Riverkeeper, the Memorial Park Association, the Garden Club of Jacksonville. They want more public discussion about all of this. They're saying that the Met Park parcel, which is 23 acres, should remain a public asset, something that everyone can come out to the riverfront and enjoy. They want a connected network of public green space and parks along downtown Jacksonville's riverfront. They're arguing that this is proven to spur economic development. They have examples from other cities around the country. So we're hearing from Riverfront Parks Now, standing really in opposition to heavily developing the waterfront.
And I can understand that opposition. I think they're taking a less is more approach, because if we hear about all of this development along the riverfront, if we get the Lot J, when Mosh moves to the North Bank, we get this big development at the shipyards, if USS Adams finally comes and Shah Khan gets the hotels, I think it was, what was it, the Four Seasons and everything else, and then we do some more development a little bit further down at the demolished old courthouse annex, and then we do a little bit more development further down at the landing, we won't be able to see the river. It'll just be a bunch of developments. So to take an approach where, you know, you incorporate green space and make that a part of the plan and keep that as an intentional part of the plan at the top of mind, so that it's not so overdeveloped that we can't even see the beauty of the riverfront and the beauty of the green space and all we have are skyscrapers, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. Development can come and it should come, but that doesn't mean that it should take the place of other green spaces or parks, because parks can be integral to a downtown area and to a community that where you want to have walkability and people exercising and people bringing their families and having events and doing different things, and you need a park for that.
Okay, on a related note, when we talk about the death of Lot J, all the recent controversies in this city, whether it comes to downtown development or the failed attempt to privatize JEA, all of these recent stories have led to people already throwing their hats in the ring to run for Jacksonville mayor. The most prominent of those is City Council Member at Large Matt Carlucci. He's announced he's running for mayor in 2023. Here he is yesterday on this program.
I have to say I got one or two emails in addition to some heartfelt conversations with some other people that just said, this city needs you. This is your time to help make a difference and get us back on course.
Carlucci says he's running on a platform of restoring trust and transparency to local government. He's a Republican, but on the show yesterday allowed that the city does need to look at additional revenue sources for all of its problems, everything from public safety to crumbling infrastructure and more. He joins Richard Danford of the city's Urban League. Charles also said to be throwing his hat in the ring, and we're more than 2 years out, but it's going to be a crowded and lively field. In a moment, I'll go back to John Delaney as a former mayor to get his thoughts about this. But first, Charles, Carlucci is saying that the city is desperate for new leadership, better transparency in local government, and a comprehensive vision for the city. Is that a winning message? How do you see this race unfolding?
Well, if this was a secret, it was a pretty poorly kept secret that Mr. Carlucci would be running. I think that the moment he took office, people were kind of sizing him up for a run at the mayor's office. So I'm not surprised that that he's in. I am a little surprised that he announced so early, given the fact that there's so much work to be done throughout the rest of the term. And he may just want to get ahead of the, you know, maybe discourage some other people from getting in. But I think that the folks who we've been rumored to get in are not going to be discouraged from joining the race at any particular point in time just because he got in early. As for his platform right now is very nebulous in terms of politics go. I mean, he's saying all of the things that people want to hear. And nothing really specific to make you go, well, that's different. But at the same time, he is a trusted voice on the city council. He has, right now, he's, of course, leading the finance committee. And so this is, for him, should be a great time to, you know, to you know, flex his muscles a little bit. The only problem with that is every move he makes from now on is going to be seen as a political move towards the mayor's office, and so he's going to have to be very careful with the types of legislation and how he's leading there, you know, forward.
Stephen in Atlantic Beach. Go ahead, Stephen.
Hi, I just wanted to comment on Matt's presentation yesterday, and when you say nebulous, I totally agree with that. He's really going to have to up his game and learn to take questions and not ramble so much, allow people to ask him what he plans to do. And I don't think he did that very well yesterday. I was very disappointed but excited that he was in because I've never heard him really make a presentation like that. Mm. He's going to have to, before he gets on public media again, come up with some concrete ideas and learn how to present them.
John Delaney, I'll go to you in just a moment as a former mayor, but first I don't want to leave out Tim Gibbons. Tim, Carlucci will have a lot of competition. It's expected to be a wide open and crowded field for mayor coming off the second term of Lenny Curry.
It's going to be interesting, and the idea that it's kicking off, you know, so early is, I guess, it gives the political writer something to write about. But, you know, to Charles' point, I think the interesting thing is going to be that idea that now everything is seen as a political thing when he does it, as though city council people are not doing everything from a political standpoint. But it does put a different gloss on it. So. It will be interesting to see, frankly, over the next 2 years, as Jacksonville tries to decide how it wants to be led and what it wants to be like as a city. It will be interesting to see who the field is and how this plays into it.
Right. Now, John Delaney, the next mayor of Jacksonville, will be taking on an incredible inbox of problems, high crime rate, strained revenue resources, crumbling infrastructure, dealing with resiliency issues. That's going to become an increasingly important problem to tackle. You almost have to ask why anyone would want this job, frankly.
Yeah, there's never a shortage, though. And I actually heard a year or so ago on this program, A.G. Gankurski describing Mayor Curry as sort of favoring what he referred to as sort of the strong man aspect of serving that Rick Scott and Donald Trump also sort of portray. And Matt, I think, is styling himself is a different approach. You know, whatever criticism you may come up with Matt for style or speech or whatever, he's known as being phenomenally honest and open. And he's one of those rare politicians that'll change his mind, that he goes along and he hears input and he finds a better logic train and will switch. So he's very well known. In the end, it's going to be, can you raise money? And as you pointed out, Melissa, that there's a lot of other names, several, at least two on the council that I'm aware of, and some others that are looking at it. Now,
and who are those names?
Well, Rory Diamond, mm-hmm. Leanna Cumber, or two that pop up. I will say this, too. The Democrats viable this time around. And, you know, the last three statewide races were won by Democrats, Governor Bill Nelson, and then, of course, Joe Biden. And so some great names are being floated out there, too. I think although Republicans have tended to dominate other than in 2011 since 1995, this is going to be wide open. And because of the jungle primary aspect, you're going to have a Democrat that's going to be in the finals. So always fun to watch.
Yeah. Nikesha Williams, the local Democratic Party, took a ton of criticism for not even fielding a candidate against Mayor Curry the last cycle. And so they will certainly be running someone. The question is who?
Yes, the question is who. And I think that after the Alvin Brown administration and the fact that he did not get reelected and Mayor Curry came in as the former Republican Party boss of the state of Florida, and the demographics of Jacksonville at that time and Curry's first run and then in his second term maybe have made the Democratic Party wary of trying to support and field a candidate that they knew probably wasn't going to win against someone who was so strong politically in the state and in this particular area. I think now with Curry having finished his second term, it is wide open. The demographics of Jacksonville have absolutely changed in the last 4 years, especially the last 8 years since Curry has been, well, by the time 2023 comes around that Curry has been mayor. And I think it will be again time for the Democratic Party to look at who they have and see that and find a viable candidate to run. But it's going to have to be someone who can, not unfortunately, but someone who can cross party lines, who can speak to both sides of the aisle, who can appeal to the old Republican guard in Jacksonville and also to the progressive liberals who are coming into the city and say, you know, this is my vision, this is my plan, this is what I'm going to do, and then garner that vote.
Kevin is in Springfield. Hi, Kevin. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning. This is more directly to Mayor Delaney. When you were in office, the millage rate was as such that it was viable. Now it's not. And another thing with that, with a tax starter, the Green Initiative with the port, let's use Tallyland. That exchange on 8th Street to 95, there's a $1 billion corridor, and it looks awful. And I always wondered about that. $1 billion. From 8th Street, just the 8th Street corridor alone, and nothing is reprised by that. And one other thing, if any of the councilmen are really serious, they have to do their homework. Jacksonville is in a desperate need of infrastructure and revenue.
Yeah. Kevin, thank you. Okay, John Delaney, you successfully convinced the taxpayers to tax themselves for the Better Jacksonville plan. Is it inevitable that the next mayor of Jacksonville is going to have to go to the public and say, and get buy-in and say, look, we've got to have some new revenue, whether it's in the form of a millage rate hike or some other way, to deal with this city's problems?
Yeah, there's plenty of capacity in the millage rate to go up and to bond. And for better or worse, I think more for the better, the pension referendum also freed up a lot of operational dollars for the city. But when you want to do a massive capital plan, and there clearly is a few billion dollars, many as much as $10 billion worth of infrastructure you could do in this county, it would take a referendum, and it may take a state law change. The beauty of a lot of that is it puts a lot of people to work, and the sales tax in Florida is about as progressive as of a sales tax as you can get because so many things are exempt from it, like medicine and food. So we'll see what the next mayors propose. But infrastructure, it's inevitably popular, but it's inevitably unpopular to have to figure out a way to pay for it.
That's right. Tim Gibbons, you know, the business community likes the light tax and regulatory environment here. You cover that sector. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, obviously, Florida overall and Jacksonville attracts people and companies from other areas because of the low tax burden and the lighter regulatory touch. But you talk to some business leaders, and there is absolutely an appetite for making the city better. And I think there are people who realize that you know, a couple extra mills is not going to have a devastating impact. Jacksonville has a very low property tax rate compared to the rest of the state. And there have been, you know, Republicans, business leaders who have been making the case that if the city is to succeed, if it's to do, continue to attract business, to continue to attract people, we need to invest in ourselves. And one of the ways of doing that is by raising the tax rate. So, you know, would that be a mixture of property tax increase and sales tax increase? Those who delve more deeply into municipal finance probably have plans. But I think that whoever the next mayor is will obviously face opposition because nobody likes taxes going up in general, but there will be appetite for some type of investment in the city.
All right. And before we wrap this up, a couple of other news and notes from the week. A former Baker County Sheriff's Office employee was arrested by the FBI Thursday in connection with the violent riot at the Capitol a few weeks ago. Brad Weeks, who worked in their IT department, arrested in McClenny. He faces charges of knowingly entering or remaining in any restricted building or grounds without lawful authority, violent entry, and disorderly conduct on Capitol grounds. Those are misdemeanors. We'll continue to follow this story as several people from our area are now facing charges from the Capitol riots. On a more positive note, the Jacksonville Jaguars say they've named a new general manager. It's Trent Baalke. Baalke was serving as interim general manager. He was first hired in February of 2020 as the team's director of player personnel, Charles Griggs, with Urban Meyer also now on board and a much buzzed about new quarterback. Can the Jaguars finally start winning some games?
Well, you know, this is, it looks like the Jaguars are trying to do an attitude adjustment. You know, they've had a reputation throughout the league amongst the players that this wasn't a place that you wanted to come to play. With a coach like Urban Meyer, they're trying to, you know, change that paradigm because, you know, he's a, quote, famous coach. People know him. They know him as a winner. What surprised me a little bit about Baalke hire is that we thought they were committed to, you know, total change, and the fact that they hired from within was a little surprising. But people seem to like this guy. He did okay out in San Francisco. And what they say is that this, you know, Baalke is the person who's going to be working with Urban Meyer, not the other way around. So the team from a football side will be definitely run by the coach and not by the general manager with the that's what we're being led to believe, and with heavy, heavy, heavy oversight from Shad Khan himself. Mm.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you all for your time on this program. Always great to get your insights, whether it's the Jaguars, Trevor Lawrence expected to be hopefully making some noise for this team, or whether it's city issues and more. Always good to have you. Nikisha Williams, John Delaney, Charles Griggs, and Tim Gibbons. Guys, thanks a lot for being here, and have a wonderful weekend.
Thanks, Melissa.
Thanks, Melissa.
Thanks. Have a good weekend.
Thank you. In a moment, how your small business can access the new round of PPP funding that's available now. We'll speak with 121 Financial about that. This is First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9. Stay with us.
Wayne Hogan of the Terrell Hogan Personal Injury and Wrongful Death Law Firm. Serious injury cases are complex, and civil trial attorneys present the evidence juries need to see and hear. More at waynehogan.law.
Visit Gainesville, Alachua County, where attractions like the Kanapahaw Botanical Gardens and the Cade Museum for Creativity and Invention can inspire a vacation state of mind. Adventures begin at visitgainesville.com.
Are we alone out here in the universe? Harvard astrophysicist Avi Loeb wants to convince you that the answer is no, and that the strange interstellar passerby Oumuamua back in 2017 was evidence.
I don't regard this as a speculation that we are not alone. In fact, I don't think that we are the smartest kid on the block.
Not convinced? You'll have to listen on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Today at 3 on WJCT News 89.9.
The U.S. saw a big decline in refugees entering the country in the last 4 years. That was by the Trump administration's design. Now, with Joe Biden in the White House, things are changing for refugees and the people waiting to help them.
We're hoping we're going to open our doors again and serve people again.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly, and you'll hear that story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 here on WJCT News 89.9.
President Biden declares democracy has prevailed, but only just.
We've learned again that democracy is precious. Democracy is fragile.
The new administration gets to work. On this week's Friday News Roundup, the latest on what new measures are being put in place and what from the past is being dismantled. That's next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, there is a new round of PPP funding available this month for small businesses. We have a lot of information for you right now, and I got all of the details from David Marovich, CEO of 121 Financial. Hi, David. Good to have you back on the show. Thanks for being with us.
Glad to be back.
So 121 Financial has opened up its PPP portal for the paycheck protection, of course. You're receiving applications. Tell us about this new round of funding. What do people need to know right now?
So I would say two things they need to know is they need to have their loan number if they receive funding in round one. The other thing is they need to have the exact dollar amount that they received in if they funded in round one. Those are really the two major things that a business owner needs to have.
Okay. Now, your institution, 121, was the only one in Jacksonville under $1 billion in assets to be in the top 10 for small business lending in this under $150,000 category. Your average loan, you say, is about $65,000. So you're in the business of keeping small businesses going, is what it sounds
correct.
Like. Tell us more about that.
So, you know.
Hi, David. Good to have you back on the show. Thanks for being with us.
Glad to be back.
So 121 Financial has opened up its PPP portal for the paycheck protection, of course. You're receiving applications. Tell us about this new round of funding. What do people need to know right now?
So I would say two things they need to know is they need to have their loan number if they receive funding in round one. The other thing is they need to have the exact dollar amount that they received in if they funded in round one. Those are really the two major things that a business owner needs to have.
Okay. Now, your institution, 121, was the only one in Jacksonville under $1 billion in assets to be in the top 10 for small business lending in this under $150,000 category. Your average loan, you say, is about $65,000. So you're in the business of keeping small businesses going, is what it sounds
correct.
Like. Tell us more about that.
So, you know, we were fortunate enough. We were able to do over 500 loans in that first round. And because we are local, we really do focus on, I would call them an underserved market, which are the smaller businesses that a lot of places, larger financial institutions just see as too small for them to service. And so that's really our niche in the market that we try to focus on. So, you know, we had some loans for as little as $1,200. And then we did do some, you know, we did one, I think the largest one we did was about $1.5 million. But the bulk we're in that under 150,000. And in fact, I think when we calculated, about 90% of our loans were in that range.
Okay. Now, this new round of funding, it's available to first-time applicants as well as people who've already benefited from the program, correct? And easier loan forgiveness rules too?
You know, it sounds like the forgiveness is going to be easier. I think the application process, for the most part, seems to be smoother as well. So we have received and approved 162 applications within a week, and equating to $11.3 million.
Wow.
And we've actually, out of that number, we've already funded 86.
That's great. And so you estimate you've saved thousands of local jobs.
Correct.
And that's what this is all about.
I haven't gotten the number yet on where we are with the local jobs with round two. But in the first round, it was more than 4,000 local jobs that equated to. So through that funding.
That is so vital to keep capital going to small businesses who are the engine of the economy. They employ by far the most people. And so I know people have so many questions that we can't answer in the time we have. But let's just end with this. How can people get in touch with you at 121 Financial? How can they start the process if they have not already applied for the second round of PPP funding that's now available?
The easiest way is to go to our website, www.121fcu.org. And we have some information there as well as the link to click so that you can begin that process.
Okay. Anything else they need to know before we let you go?
No, I think that's really the key. And I think if there's anybody out there, if they're not sure, that to go ahead and, go to our website. There's some information there about those that can apply, which they broadened that a little bit this time to include, gig workers and 1099 folks. And so I would say, if you can, go ahead and apply.
Yeah, you have nothing to lose. He's David Mirovich, CEO of 121 Financial in Jacksonville. David, thanks so much.
Thank you, Melissa.
And that's our show. Thanks for listening. Make sure to join us again at noon for the Florida Roundup, our live statewide call-in program. I'm Melissa Ross. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.